This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. It's Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. We will have some mean tweets later. What, 15, 20 minutes from now?
Yeah, a buddy of mine was like, he texted me after last week, said my son is crying laughing in the car on his way to school.
So he likes the mean tweets.
But we never really done them at 8:15.
Oh,
so I think for those kids, yeah, that are heading off to school, put a smile on their face, Mike. You know, the
what
the rain's
would make
coming
kids
back.
Happier than hearing people being mean to you?
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
A good text.
Sort of things you and him share in common, Mike.
True, yes. Somebody texted in earlier to say that this should be a particularly good batch of mean tweets this coming weekend because you've got the Husky-USC game.
Yes.
And the Husky fans will be mad that you're trying hard not to be biased.
Correct.
And then, and yes, I know the word is biased. And the USC fans will be mad because they all think that you are biased.
Uh-huh.
So how will
so it's
you?
It's a no-win situation.
How will you handle this? This fine line to walk.
So it's why I've been up to 1 a.m. every night, just putting
stressed.
The work in. The work in.
All you can do is
put the work in and let the rest take care of itself.
Are you more encouraged or discouraged by the Seahawks team so far?
Ooh. If you listened to yesterday, you would think you have my answer on that one.
I mean, you were so negative yesterday.
Are you asking for the first 3 weeks or just that Saints
game? I'm asking for
the totality of
where they're at, where they're going. Are you encouraged or discouraged?
I'd have to lean just to the encouraged side because the most important position on this team is playing the best he ever has. I jumped on with Bernsey and Gambo yesterday afternoon, and they're
down
our sister
Arizona.
Station down in Arizona, the afternoon drive guys, and Gambo will be on an hour. In every one of these matchups over the years, I've jumped on with them, and they both said the same thing. Like, wasn't this more fun a few years ago? Like, when both of these teams were at the top of the division, there was a couple years where there was some real animosity, and Bruce Arians stirring it up. And I said, yeah, it really was, because, you know, right now, both these teams are looking up. You're looking up at the 3-0 49ers, and I was listening to Golic and Wingo this morning. The 49ers are third in this league in DVOA, something the stat guys look an awful lot at. It's basically wins above replacement on any given play in a game. How is that team performing? And the 49ers are performing pretty well, and they're 3-0. And Garoppolo is now, 11-2 as a starter? The Rams are 3-0. Has it been pretty? No. But have they shown a bunch of grit?
It hasn't been pretty for the Niners either. I mean, both teams have had ugly wins, but they're both 3-0.
Yes. And you know what? You were in line for one of those ugly wins in your building Sunday against a Saints team that was desperate and hungry and played with more edge than you did, and you didn't get it done. But yeah, I think through three games, you went to Pittsburgh, you beat them, you won an ugly game in the opener, and you should beat Arizona this week. You are better than them.
Yeah, I'm more encouraged by the defense, Brock. I think it's been better than I thought it would be. I know that they struggled a little bit this past week in pass rush, but again, we kind of went through it, and other than giving up a short field and other than mistakes made by special teams in the offense, I thought they actually played New Orleans pretty tough. I know they had a backup quarterback, but that's still a very talented offense. And I thought they had a pretty good week. I definitely thought they played well against Pittsburgh. And I know they gave up a lot of yards passing against Cincinnati, but when they needed to show up, they did in that game. So I've been very encouraged by the defense. Here's the thing. How has this team been unable to run the ball the way they want to? This is what they're built to do. They're built to run the ball. And in three games, we've got three separate reasons why they couldn't. The first time was a surprise 52 defense.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected it, and all of a sudden, Cincinnati came out with five down linemen, couldn't run. The second game, it was a secondary they thought they could exploit, right? And Pittsburgh, just they're getting after that secondary, and so they didn't end up running as much as normal. But they didn't run the ball particularly well or very often against Pittsburgh. And then last week, they got behind early, partly because they didn't run the ball well and partly because they made some mistakes elsewhere. But they're now three games into a 16-game season, and they still yet to have a game where they do what they were built to do.
Yeah,
that seems like an issue for me. Now, maybe they're going to go into Arizona and run for 250 yards. Carson's going to get right. Penny's going to do his thing, and we're going to see the Seahawks running game that we've expected to see. But I am scared that that they are not able to do what they were built to do, because if they were going to throw it as much as they're doing now, they should have built their team that way, right? You designed the team to run. You designed the team for a balanced attack with a hardcore, big, physical rushing offense. You signed guys like DJ Fluker and Mike Iupati, whose biggest strengths is that they move mountains. They are gigantic humans who move people the other way. They're not great pass blockers. They can do it. I'm not saying they're incompetent, but that's not why you would spend money on either Upati or especially on Fluker. You spend money on those guys for their ability to drive the opponent onto their back,
yes,
not to step backwards themselves.
Yes.
So if that is the case, and yeah, you've got some weaponry on offense, but you brought back Jerron Brown. You didn't exactly go into the market and say, where are the best wide receivers? You drafted, yeah, DK Metcalf once the value became too great to pass up, and then a couple of guys much later in the draft at wide receiver, but you didn't go spend your resources on trying to make sure you were the best receiving team you could. Mm-hmm. You have Ed Dixon and Billy Bozeman. Now, granted, Disley's been really good at catching the ball, but those guys are primarily here because they're great run blocking and pass blocking
so
tight ends.
Did this article sway you that much, Danny Roeder?
No,
are
I said,
you questioning the very philosophical foundation?
I'm not
of
questioning
team?
The philosophy. I'm questioning why they're not able to deliver on it. I'm questioning why they built a team to run and yet they're only having success throwing. Now, I know it's only 3 weeks in. No, I'm not. There's nothing to do with Danny's article, although I thought that fit very nicely because I wrote this actually 2 nights ago. We just didn't have time for it yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think Danny's made a good point. He says Pete Carroll's coaching the team he wishes he has instead of the one he's currently in charge of. And I recommend reading that column. It's up at 710sports.com. And Danny's thing is much more about the aggressiveness on fourth down. He thinks Pete needs to be even more aggressive given the team that he actually has.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this is sort of presupposing this idea that, hey, they can't run even though they were built to do so, and they can throw.
Okay,
How does that happen?
I'll give you three reasons, and you may say excuse, excuse, excuse. You may say, oh, decent explanation, excuse, explanation. Actually, I'll give you four things. I'll add some context to it. Here's the three teams that you played. Where do they sit in rush defense right now? They played you. Right,
so that's part of it.
Yes, it's part of it. So where do they sit in actually stopping the run per attempt? Because that, to me, is the biggest key.
I'm guessing all three are pretty good.
No, Cincinnati's 28th, New Orleans is 26th, and Pittsburgh is 14th.
But Cincinnati brought out the 52 defense.
They did against you and found some success. So contextually, you're not dealing with the New England Patriots who are giving up...
That seems like a bigger problem.
2.2 yards per rush, or Philly who's given up 2.8 yards per rush, right? Or the Bears who are giving up 3.1. You didn't play those fronts. Hmm. You played fronts that a couple other opponents actually found success running against. So I would give you a few things here. Number one, Chris Carson's four fumbles are a killer. Right, for a team that values the football, that was historic a season ago, that gave the ball 11 times away, both fumbling and interceptions the whole season last year, Chris Carson has already fumbled four times, sabotaged four different possessions, done it, Mike, in the run game. That's a big-time factor. And then the effect that it has on everybody involved. I mean, when that happens, that's kind of like someone on our show dropping an F-bomb. Like, whoa, 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 dump, dump, dump that button. Like, that can't happen. Like, if it happens once, okay, we can dump you and whatever. If it happens twice, like, come on, bro. Like, we can't have you on. It happens third time, and that's kind of where this team finds itself.
Is that why we haven't had Bert Breer back?
That's exactly right.
Too many F-bombs.
There's a little bit of concern there. Because it hits everyone between the eyes like, dang. That can't happen. That's a real killer to the confidence of calling the run game, of believing in Chris, of Chris himself, you know, running. And I can ask Coach Carroll and say, yeah, I know you're not going to tell him to be any different. You have to have him be violent and hair on fire. And it's a carriage issue, and he's got to tuck the ball in and all that. But it does have an effect. I think that's number one.
Okay.
Number two, I think what all three of these teams have done is what Dallas did against you in the playoff game. You know what that is defensively? It has said, we're not going to be stagnant. Are you kidding me? We're not going to line up Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald and let you wail on us. We're not going to give you a sitting target for you to, you know, combo block and hit with your 700 pounds of force. We're going to move, and we're going to get into 52, and we're going to slant, and we're going to stunt, and we're going to be Blitzburg and Blitzfest, yeah, and throw people from everywhere, safeties and linebackers. And a week ago, the Saints bringing their linebackers and throwing a bunch of personnel. Like, we're not going to give you a sitting target. And you know what, Fluke? You know, the league would tell you and why they didn't necessarily value him. They didn't know he could process. Like, when the game goes fast, that is a disadvantage to Fluke. When people line up, okay, here's my target. I'm gonna hit you and I'm gonna wail on you. He's pretty darn phenomenal. Even bringing in Ndamukong Suh to water, right? Like, he can do that. But you start to get quicker and faster and movement, it gets a little bit tougher for those guys up front. Are there adjustments to that? Absolutely. Are there other plays and schemes you can call? Sure. And you can get to some of that. But I think that those are a couple major contributing factors to, you know, why you've struggled to run the ball. Hmm. And, you know, just and that would be my third, is to say, please diversify. Give me sprint draw. Give me trap. Give me these things. Give me more screen game. They ran two screens. The first one was going to be a tight end screen in the game. You watched Russell throw it at the feet because the Saints smelled it. The other one, you know, they got big time rush and it was a minus three on the first possession on third and 15. You need more. What have all of these teams you played against? When you watch the Chiefs and the Patriots, what do? They just screen you to death. And while that doesn't count for rushing yards, in essence, it's very similar. It's like a draw in my day.
But I understand some of that, right? You need to be aggressive because you're just trying to generate some pressure on the quarterback and you have some issues in your secondary. So teams are going to take advantage of that and screen against you. Nobody needs to be extra aggressive against Seahawks. They're stopping the run. And they're doing it by
stunting and slanting and moving and blitzing because they're not just a stationary target. So they're doing a bunch of that. And by the way, one of those screens is going to go for minus three, but the next one could go for 53. So I think that there is
I haven't seen that yet, man. I have not seen that level of proficiency. I continue to believe it's because Russell's short. And, you know, I don't generally bring out the Russell's short argument. Mm-hmm. I do on screens. I think that play in particular is problematic for him because of his height. I think that when you've got gigantic mammoth human beings from the defensive line rushing at you, and the offensive linemen give them the ole on purpose and say, go ahead, go after him, and he's just going to dump it over your head, it's hard for him to see to dump it over their head.
So I have two choices right now, okay, and I have two voices going on in my head. I have one side of Pete going, no, Mike, really?
I know.
Really, Mike? No, Mike, that's not it. And then the other side, I have Pete going, well, I haven't thought about that, but that makes some sense.
You know, I'm not a Russell short guy, and it's a problem. I don't think so. When he gets a ball batted down occasionally, I don't think that. When he misses receivers, I think quarterbacks do that all the time. I think Russell has found a million different ways to play through being a shorter quarterback, to the point where, you know, we're talking about this the other day when I was with some buddies. Like, dude, this whole idea of height for a quarterback is ridiculous. I mean, just, oh, he's 6'5", so get him out there. He's going to be just fine. Like, I don't think there's any problem with Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson or any of these guys playing it short, but I think it's hard for them on screens.
Oh, there's a bunch of plays. Romo talked about that the other day on a third down where, you know, we had a little in route and there was just blinded when you're 5'10", you just can't see through that lane. Jacob Eason would see that and throw over that. Now Russell scrambles for 8 and he totally offsets it.
That's something else.
Yes.
He offsets it. I think the screen is the one thing that I think he struggles with.
Interesting.
That. I don't think that's ever going to be a big part of his game. Although you say that, Russell will probably hear him be like, oh, really? And then go out there and become the greatest screening quarterback.
Yeah, they're going to have 225 yards of screens this
weekend. Who is the greatest screen throwing quarterback?
Tom Brady's the greatest.
It's got to be Brady.
Oh, not
right?
even close.
That's just what
he's
good
the greatest
at.
QB sneaker and he's the greatest screener.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And some of that is like the disadvantage of him running a 5.440, right? Because those D linemen do salivate. They know he can't move. Like if you actually get to them and then he's got just guts for days and will draw them to him. And then he's also 6'4".
If the Seahawks, Brock, are throwing it well, not running it well, but designed to run and more than they are to throw, what do they do next? Do you keep trying to establish the run based on the fact that that's what your personnel is?
Well, you're 8th in the league and throwing on first down. So it's not as if you're in the bottom of the league and, oh my gosh, you're just running right into heavy boxes all the time. Some of these struggles really are exacerbated like they were this weekend because it's 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1.
Mm-hmm.
That's what can't happen. Like that is the biggest deal killer of all of this. Is every run game every week going to be great? No. Are you going to have a 200-yard rushing game this season? Yes. Could it be this Sunday? Yeah, it could be. Are you going to have some where it could be 120 and there's some hard yards, but you know what? You shorten the game. The play action pass off of it was so beneficial that, you know, you paid dividends in other ways that aren't always easily measured. And you know, and you also wore people down and beat them up a little bit, which is also more difficult to measure. It was the fact that on 3rd-and-1
right.
and 4th-and-1 in your building, you failed.
Well,
that for this group can't happen. And by the way,
the
week before, and actually the 2 weeks before, you won because your run game at the end of the game against Cincy in a 4-minute drill could close it out. You won in Pittsburgh because the end of a game in a 4-minute drill and a 4th-and-1 you made.
Yep.
This game
you were just due. I mean, you know, we'll see. We got some guys on the phone here. We may grab some calls. 206-421-3776. The last part of it, Brock, is this. If Russell's having more success throwing the ball without the right personnel for it than they are running the ball, even with that personnel, should you change the way you start adding personnel this next offseason? And I know it's not Pete's style. I know Pete wants to have a balanced attack. But if Russell's this good and he's able to have this much success despite the lack of resources being spent on making that the case, is it finally time to just say, forget it, let's go?
Well, here's one thing where Tom Brady and Russell Wilson are exactly alike. They've taken lesser parts at that position and made them great. Mm. And I think Russell would tell you, Salk, I got that guy. He's number 14, and you just wait. And why am I throwing to him? Because I believe in him.
Well, but there's more than that. It's not just having DK Metcalf, who I think you're right will be that. I mean, Brady, they changed the offense for him. They made it a, you know, spread it out, throw it all around, let Brady do his thing. He's in charge of everything kind of an offense. And then when they really hit their best offensive stride, it was Randy Moss and Wes Welker, and they got the best weapons available for him. And then later it was Gronk, and they tried the whole Aaron Hernandez thing, which obviously didn't work because of the off-field issues. But on the field, that Gronk Hernandez combination was ruthless. So, okay. I mean, I think you've got to start asking at that point, do you need to make some offensive changes and some personnel changes to fit who Russell is? And I don't want to do all that, but right now your team is proving it to you by failing to run the ball, which they were built to do, having success throwing it.
Where do they rank in rushing the ball?
They rush, I think it's 15th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15th in the league right now. Got to be better than that. And if you're going to win 10 games this year, which you did a year ago.
It's also not just what they rank. You've watched the games and seen how they're struggling. I mean, like, we can talk rank all we want. I mean, the game rushing yards is always a bad way to judge things. They're not running the ball well. They're not doing it with any effectiveness or consistency, regardless of what the numbers say. So at what point do you pull the trigger and say, I got to go the other direction?
Yeah, they're 4.0 yards a carry. That's in the bottom 10 of the league. So, yeah, you're maybe 15th in gross yards. It looks like you're about 22nd, 4.0 a carry. That's not good enough. Nope, that absolutely is not good enough for this team. And I'm going to guess will be a hyper-focus as they get the practice field today and get ready for an Arizona front seven that's vulnerable.
Text message, they did that with Harvin and Graham, and it didn't work. Maybe. Maybe Russell wasn't the same quarterback then. Or also, maybe those guys weren't the right players. I mean, just saying that Harvin never did anything ever again and had some mental issues. And as for Jimmy Graham, I mean, that just for whatever reason wasn't the right fit based on everything else they were trying to do. I don't know. I think there is absolutely some conversation that needs to happen. And you know me, Brock, I've been as staunchly supportive of what Pete's trying to do running the ball as anybody. And if they were having success with it, I'd be jumping up and down saying, let's go. Be quiet, everybody who wants to throw the ball. Pete knows what he's doing, and they're running it and having success and everything that comes after. And they bully everybody. But they're not doing that. They're not bullying teams through three games. They're not running the ball successfully. They're not jamming it down teams' throats. In fact, the only time they've really significantly had success is when Russ comes out and throws the ball. Now, that's only three games. So I'm not making a snap judgment and saying, okay, that's it, time to make a change, but this is going to be on the watch list. You do it one more game against Arizona and you only throw the ball with success and don't run against the lousy Cardinals?
You hear that, Kyle?
You don't think we're having a conversation?
I heard it. We're just moving on.
Yep.
We're moving on from the watch list.
Because of 2-2-2.
I'm not even going to do it.
2-3-1.
But
one,
I am
going
to do mean tweets, okay? The kids are clamoring.
That's
clamoring.
Not coming to the podcast, right? We're retiring.
I can hear the kids all
over
the Pacific.
We'll be able to clean that up in post-production with the podcast.
That'll be nice.
Yeah,
how do
Dad, Mom, he told us he was going to get to mean tweets before I got to school. Can we please do this?
Dear FS1, please put a muzzle on Brock Hubert. Thanks, all of us.
Oh, that's simple, but true.
Ask freaking Brock Hubert. He hasn't shut up all night.
Why do you talk so much in those broadcasts?
I don't. I went back and
listened.
What
do you mean?
I went back and listened.
Well,
I counted
my Brock,
words.
Shouldn't you just be silent while you're on the broadcast and allow the game to tell the story?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you think Joel Klatt gets these?
Yeah.
Yes.
Everybody gets these. Talk show hosts
get
this.
No, I think it's just Brock.
Hey, be quiet up on your radio show. Well, if I'm quiet, then there's nothing happening. It's just dead air.
Cannot figure out why Brock Huard talks like a Southern preacher.
That is a good question.
That was a good one. That one made me laugh.
I've got some ideas on it. He's from Puyallup, and he's basically a preacher. I mean, this is not complicated. Brock basically talks like a Southern preacher because he is one.
You know other Puyallup folk? Do they all have Southern accent a little bit like me?
Yeah, a little bit. Puyallup folk I know.
He speaks well, but no need for Brock Huard to talk every second between each and every play. Why do color analysts feel like they need to fill every second? No need, especially on TV.
Why, Brock, this seems to be a common theme. Why won't you lay out occasionally?
My wife is sick of listening to Brock Huard, and she never says anything about the announcers.
This was what, Utah and USC?
Yeah.
I mean, those aren't fan bases that I expect this level of anger from.
Nope.
But the Pac-12 schools have, they've some have hated you for like 20 years. You know, this is more deep-rooted.
Do you think USC has hated Brock for 20 years? Did you ever
maybe.
Beat USC?
What?
Did you ever beat USC?
Yes, I beat USC.
Did you?
A couple times. Watch your mouth.
Did you?
What?
And Utah
wasn't like USC.
Right. USC. Oh, it was like John Robinson USC.
Yeah.
It was a Paul Hackett John Robinson.
That doesn't count. You didn't really beat USC.
But we did.
You beat like US asterisk or something.
Had to turn down the audio on the USC game.
Uh-oh.
Brock Heward constantly talking gave me a headache.
Giving people headaches. You take Advil, Tylenol for that?
Do you know what fan base in the Pac-12 actually heats me the most?
Arizona State?
No. Nope. It's shocking. No. Well, maybe.
UCLA?
UCLA.
You burned them?
UCLA's close because you think Mora, but no.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you almost went there and then, forced them to take Cade McNown.
Stanford.
Oh, really?
Oh, Stanford.
Yep. Why do they hate
I don't
so
know,
much?
But that's the one I get the most vitriol when I do their games.
Yep. Brock Heward, you talk too much. Can you be quiet for just a minute?
I wish you could see how big Lydia's frown is right now. She's so bummed out about these mean
Her
tweets.
And Grandpa Mike Heward, both very sad about
Yeah. Things. Peg doesn't like this either, right?
No.
No.
Brock Heward gets more words in per game than any other broadcaster.
This is a theme. This is now a trend. What happened on
Howdy's gone weekend? Back and searched for years. This has been his this
for
is his
years?
Mean tweet
what?
Theme. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I promise you that every one of these tweets is from September 20th to September 21st of this year.
Dude, why were you talking so much?
I wasn't. I went back.
You can
I
verify.
Tried.
Howdy set the search parameters.
Yep. Well, I sent you most of these.
Please tell Brock Heward it's okay to be silent sometimes.
Jeez. You probably should have gone silent.
Yeah,
just thinking of telling you. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, they're all excited to start.
Yeah. I can't watch anything with Brock Heward. It's not fair that I have to mute the whole game.
Oh, it's not fair.
Howdy, please tell me you got to the sitcom character looking guy. Did I send you that one?
Oh, Brock Heward may be worse than Dan Fouts.
Well, that's tough. Worse than the beard? Do we need a nickname for you and Joe? If they're the bird and the beard, what should you and Joe be? We need to come up with something like that.
There was a fella that texted or tweeted, it was at Matt Leinart, and said he looks like one of those 80s sitcom dads gone old and ugly. and someone tweeted, like, and so does Brock Heward.
Aw.
Brock Heward has such a punchable face.
Yes.
Just something about it.
Yeah.
It was from at Bob Stelt.
Yeah. Come on, Bob.
Jeez, Bob. For petulant child, then you go punchable face.
Is there anything worse than turning on the game and hearing Brock Heward's voice? I say no. Take your calls next in the jungle.
Wow, Jim Rome weighing in. Who'd have thought?
Thank you, Howard.
Heward, making mistakes. Hear the jungle.
Mean tweets has got to be at least a once a month.
You want to keep doing that?
It has to be, right?
Sure.
Howdy, can we hire you? I'll pay you on the side. Can we
yes,
do that
absolutely.
Once a month on the podcast?
Wow, right. That would be good. That's important. It's important that people continue to hear all of
so
the mean tweets.
We'll get so mad. I think all of those were from USC.
Really?
I don't think of Utah.
Oh, too nice. Too Everybody nice. In Utah is very Utah. Nice. Yeah. I'm not going to write that kind
yeah.
of thing.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Imagine what you're going to get this week. A second week with the people from USC.
I don't even know if I can look at
Who think
at
you
them.
Won't shut up.
I don't think I can look
And
at
then
them.
Husky fans who are going to think that you are trying too hard to be unbiased. So.
Mm-hmm.
What a weekend. What a weekend it's going to be. We will talk some more about Washington coming up here in just a moment. It is Washington Wednesday, and Brock's got some info from a guy who knows his team pretty well next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
A little techno in honor of the return of Luke Wilson and the departure of Nick Vinette. A couple of techno twins, the two of them. Welcome back, Luke. As for Nick, we hardly knew you. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Brock, there's a couple more days of this. About 2.5 more shows here. We've got the rest of today. We've got tomorrow. We've got Friday. And then if you were just tuning in for the first time here in a week or so, Brock and Salk is going to be making a move. We'll be off doing daily shows and instead we'll be doing a weekly podcast. More on that in a second, because people should know we're not leaving, we're not going away, we're still going to be on the station. Brock will be doing a series of regular segments on shows.
I just ran into Cairo downstairs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, our main engineer. I call him Cairo because when we were in Ireland together and people said, oh, where are you from? You know, it was Cairo. Oh, Cairo, Egypt. No, actually, no, we're from Seattle, but that's okay. And I think we're going to look into getting a pretty good system out of the house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we can just be connected all the time.
Oh, good. Well, so you never know. Brock may just turn himself on at some point and start talking.
That's right.
He'll teach you just to 1 a.m., just start jumping in the middle of a show.
That's right.
But Brock will be on a bunch of the different shows, especially still here in the morning. I'll be doing some stuff. I'll be have a regular segment on the station as well. So you'll still hear us on the air. You'll still get Brock's Above and Beyond podcast. And then the big thing is that we'll still be doing this podcast ourselves, Brock and Salk podcast. If you want to stay with us, it'll be every week. It'll be every Wednesday morning. You can hear us. It'll drop every Wednesday morning. And if you want to subscribe to that and have it automatically downloaded to your phone every week, text the word podcast right now to 710-710 podcast. To 710-710. You'll get a bounce back. You write yes. You get another bounce back. You click the link, and then you press the button that says subscribe, and that's all you got to do. It'll automatically come to your phone every single Wednesday, and you can stay with us. Even if you've never done a podcast before, your smartphone can get this done. So, start that process. Text podcast to 710-710. Now, I know there have been a lot of questions about what will replace this show, what will go on in the 7 to 10 spot. Tomorrow, you will get that answer. We will be making some changes here on the station.
What time?
I don't know. What time do you want to do it? 7:30?
Sure.
7:30 tomorrow? Sound about right?
Okay.
Okay. Maybe we'll have one of those people on with us at 7:30, one of the new hosts who will be in this spot at 7:30. Maybe we'll talk to both of them tomorrow. There'll be two new folks. They'll be doing the show, and we'll tell you about that tomorrow. You'll get a hint later on today. How's that? You'll get a hint later on today in the station.
A tease about a hint.
That's exactly
right. That's
a tease for a hint. Yeesh. It'll all come true for something that will start on Monday. Really excited about the new show that'll go on here as well. The details are to follow if you want to stay with us, though. In addition, text podcast to 710-710. And right now, it's a little Washington Wednesday.
Washington Wednesdays. Brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors. And by Heritage Distilling Company, makers of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon.
We got a couple more days where I can talk about this USC-UW matchup, and I will, since I'll be calling the game Saturday with Fox. But I reached out to, and yesterday we had Tom McShay on. He was the part of the broadcast of Brian Griese and Steve Levy, and we got a chance to listen and watch those guys over the weekend in Provo. We heard from Todd yesterday. I reached out to Brian Griese last night. And I said, hey, man, we got this little segment called Washington Wednesdays. Not little. It's actually huge. One of our biggest segments. Would you mind giving me some of your takeaways from what you saw up close and personal with the Husky team? And probably not a surprise, he started where McShay started, and that is with Jacob Eason. And Brian Griese said Eason looked really good. He looked control, calm in the pocket, layering throws, hitting checkdowns when warranted. Both McShay and I were equally impressed. He has to set aside, I like this point from Brian, he has to set aside expectations and just get a little bit better each and every week. And if he does that, I think this will be his only year at UW. You got a little McShay yesterday when we asked McShay about Eason, kind of his takeaways and where he's going. Todd said similar thoughts.
It will not surprise me at all if in 3-4 months from now, if we're talking about him as one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the 2020 NFL draft class.
And I like Brian's advice to Jacob, and I think he follows it. Like, I don't think Eason does not strike me like Browning before him is a guy that's going to sit there and plan and think. And you know, I think he's just in the moment guy. I don't think he's going to be weighed down by the expectations. He's dealt with expectations. He was a 5-star kid. He was a Georgia recruit. He lived in the SEC, came back here to earn that job. So I don't think this year we're going to say, oh man, the pressure just, it got to him. It broke him. It was too much. So similar thoughts between Griese and McShay on the quarterback. Griese went on further and said he thought the O-line was really impressive. I love Nick Harris. What an undersized athletic center, but I love to watch that guy play. The right guard Kirkland is better in year number two. Adams looked okay, maybe not as dominant as we thought. And I also kind of put on the tape, and I would agree with that. Trey is doing better. You remember he missed most of last season with a back injury and ACL early in his career. I think over the course of the year, he could continue to grow. I'll tell you who are two just absolute studs on this team that I think in time we'll talk about more are their two tight ends. Hunter Bryant and Kate Otten, as I put on the tape and I watched college tight ends. Like honestly, you cut or you traded Nick Vinette. I think you could sign Cade Otton and Hunter Bryant and play those guys on the Seahawks roster like on Sunday. Like, I think both of those guys' skill set and just talent is at that kind of level, and certainly in time will be. In my opinion, they need to be a big physical wide receiver. Maybe the loss of Ty Jones will hurt in time a little bit, but that is an area they don't have. And that's where Hunter and Cade fill some of the void, in my opinion. But that is still a position that will be filled in the years to come, but not necessarily on the roster right now. Lastly, defense is a work in progress. They played well versus BYU. What stood out was some of the depth on their defensive line. A lot of new names, but very similar production. So there's some thoughts from a quarterback evaluating that game. And I would say, you know, as I said earlier, kind of echoes a lot of my sentiment when I watch this tape.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge area they will have, though, and I don't know if it will show up as much this game as it did against Cal, as it will against Oregon, as it will against some others this year, is their linebacker level. That's the one position. When you watch Ben Burkhirvan in this defense, Mike, over the years, he's at the line of scrimmage. Like, you know, the defense, they stunt, they move, they do a lot of different things on their D-line. They fill from linebackers and safeties, and, you know, they throw a different front almost every single play. But you could count on Ben Burkhirvan just being the eraser. Like, he was just on the line. He just reacted and he made the plays. And right now, I think through both physical talent and experience, they just don't have that. They've got a true freshman that'll play a little, a redshirt freshman that'll play a little, a redshirt freshman that plays a little bit more, and then, you know, the two older kids that are just kind of role player guys, not impact, game changing, win a national title kind of guys.
Right.
So that's the one area over the course of the season, maybe not Saturday that shows up as much, but over the course of the season that's got to grow and develop.
You like this other running back, huh?
I think all three of these running backs pretty good. McGrew, do you remember watching Sean McGrew?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
The Gatorade State Player of the Year in California. He's kind of grown, right? He's changed his body.
He's not as little as he was when we were watching.
No.
I mean, when he first came in, he was like, oh, my God, this guy's going to get killed out there.
Correct.
But, no, he's grown, and I think he provides a good burst.
Yes, those three. It takes those three to fill Miles' shoes. Mm. Richard Newton would be the redshirt freshman with 5 touchdowns and runs hard, wildcat guy. McGrew and Ahmed is still the one that's maybe the not instinctive, most natural guy, but man, is he fast. So, yeah, this will be a good matchup Saturday. I would expect this. I told Tom Tagney earlier, big Husky fan. I said, Tom, a few weeks ago, I can't bet. That spread with the Cal game was ludicrous. Do you remember that? It was like a 13-point spread. Mm. Ludicrous that it was that big. The fact that this one's a 10.5 is also pretty striking to me. A double digits against a team as talented as USC
Brock,
is.
You said
end.
That about Hawaii. You said that about BYU.
Huh.
And they rolled them both.
Not as clearly as I said about Cal. Cal was a 13.5. When you're talking a conference foe, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot of points.
Is it?
I think it is. For a team that at any time can throw it up to their big receivers, as you saw against Utah, and make something happen, to me, that's a
well,
that's
you cost
a lot
me money on that Hawaii game, so don't burn me again.
I'm sorry. Right. Darn it. What do
you make,
spread in that
what do you make of USA just in general?
Clay Helton's like the nicest man ever.
You always say that, but I mean, that's like the Jake Locker curse. Like, what do you make of USC?
Their O-line way better than the USC that I had in the Cotton Bowl 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You remember that? That was embarrassing. Poor Sam Darnold. Kept calling him Sam Bradford. Screwed that up in the broadcast because he was just getting killed like Sam was. They're much improved there. That's an interesting job. So everyone down there, right, all clamors for Urban Meyer. Oh, our coach was in the stadium last week. Ugh. Oh, he was in the pregame show. Oh, they all want Urban Meyer.
Because they haven't had enough problems.
I kind of want Urban Meyer there, too.
Survey 100 diehard USC fans, and 99 of them will say, give me Urban Meyer.
Did you see John Wilner shared this week is like the top 6 recruits in the state of California. None of them are staying in state.
Crazy.
None of them playing in the Pac-12.
Wow. Yep.
5 are going to SEC, 1 to the Big 12 or
that's
Big
amazing.
10.
And why? Because
they need Urban Meyer who can recruit.
None of them
and bring
believe
the
none of those recruits believe that Clay will be there.
And
so,
they shouldn't.
Yep, that was a bummer in last year's
the
class.
The Pac-12 needs Urban Meyer. Cuz the Pac-12 needs USC.
Ugh. There's got to be somebody else. There's nobody else other than Urban Meyer who could do that job. There's no one else between Clay Helton and Urban Meyer. Okay, maybe Pete Carroll. All right. John Gambador is going to join us coming up in 20 minutes from Arizona Sports 98.7. We'll get ourselves a pretty good sense of what's going down in the desert leading up to the game on Sunday. Plus, he's usually good for some fun trash talk. Before we do it, good news, bad news, no news, and a huge honor for a great friend. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah! It's Friday!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, we'll talk to Gambo, find out what's going on in the desert. Coming up here in 15 minutes, the Cardinals ready for the Seahawks invasion on Sunday. We'll ask the loudmouth from Phoenix. Well, not from Phoenix. When you hear him talk, you'll know where he's from. First, we'll see what's in the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
After trading Nick Vinette to the Steelers for a fifth-round pick, the Seahawks are bringing back Luke Wilson.
I would say good news. I don't think I'm going to sit here over the next 14 weeks and go, man, I can't believe they traded Nick Vinette. Man, how can you make that move? You got Jacob Hollister on the practice squad. You got Luke Wilson, which is a very similar version to Nick Vinette. You've got Ed Dixon coming back in 4 weeks. So I think to get a fifth-round pick, more than likely an upper high, fifth-round pick for Nick Vinette, that's a good deal. Good news.
Yeah, right now it's no news. I mean, fifth-round picks are fine. I'm glad they're getting one. But a Nick Vinette
just Richard
for Luke
Sherman.
Wilson.
You're right. No news. Sorry.
Are you done?
Totally.
Are you quite done?
Absolutely.
Are you quite done?
No, in 2 days.
Are you quite done? The fifth-round pick is some small good news. The rest of it is no news. Nick Vinette's not very good, and Luke Wilson's not very good. So there you go.
Cam Chancellor, fifth-round pick. Richard Sherman, fifth-round pick. Going to keep going. KJ Wright, fifth-round pick. Sure, nothing.
Are you no news. Are you quite done?
Totally.
Good news, bad news, no news.
So Justin Dunn threw two scoreless innings as the opener, but the Mariners lost 3-0 to the Astros.
So you don't even need picks because Doug Baldwin wasn't a draft pick, right? Because sometimes you get good players that were undrafted. So who even cares about having picks?
Mike, the Mariners had 27 outs in the game. How many of them were via strikeout last night?
Of the 27?
Of the 27, how many came in the shutout loss to
18?
The Astros? Well done. Exactly 18 a season.
Two out of three.
Yes.
Mike, the Mariners have played 18 games against the Astros this year. What is their record?
They are 1-17.
Well done, Mike. Wow, you're on fire.
What was the score of that game they won on June the 5th, 2019?
Like 11-2 or something?
No, close. It was a 14-1 trouncing.
Oh, dude, that's pretty close.
And you made the Astros so mad that they have come back and not lost since.
You woke up the beehive in the Astros.
If you only wouldn't have beat them 14-1 on the 5th of June,
yeah,
you wouldn't be 1-17 against them.
Justin Dunn looked pretty good last night, which is good news. And Tommy Malone continues to pitch well. I mean, they gave up what? He gave up three runs yesterday. One of them wasn't really his fault. Austin Nola made a terrible throw home. I thought he pitched pretty well. He has been a nice little revelation this year. Curious to see if he can keep that going next season.
You know what else has been pretty good, actually, in September? Has been your bullpen.
Yeah, it's been a lot better.
You figured out, and you got some arms down in AA. It's going to be a very competitive, very, very competitive bullpen race next March down in the desert. But, yeah, the Astros are just at a different level. So we knew that all along, and that's not bad news. That's no news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Speaking of the Mariners game last night, our own Dave Grosby, the Gros, threw out the first pitch.
Good news. Cool. Cool to see Gros's tweet about it as well. An experience of a lifetime, something he will never forget. 2-9 on the back. We're in jersey number 29 and represent nearly 3 decades in this market, being one of the voices that has us here.
Yeah.
Kyle's here because of Gros's voice, of listening to him. Those Gros and Gas voicemails. I mean, I still chuckle. I can still imagine some of those guys and the Beaver guy and the different guys through the years and Smokey McPot and all of that. The guy has been a legend for decades. Cool.
Well, I would go even beyond that. Say none of us are doing sports radio without people like the Gros, who were really pioneers in the field. There are only so many of these folks that took the leap into the origins of sports radio, 20 years or so ago, and said, all right, let's try this. We're going to do sports radio full time instead of just having like the occasional sports show and a news talk station.
Yep.
It's an awesome thing. The Gros was one of the trailblazers. He's a legend. He's the Gros father. And awesome to see him honored yesterday with the first pitch.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mariners prospects Cal Raleigh, Logan Gilbert, and Evan White are spending this week with the M's to get accustomed to a big league schedule.
I think it's kind of cool. Just be around the big leaguers and see what it's like. They're not ready for those kind of call-ups yet, necessarily, but they're not that far away either. And if you're not going to start the clock on these kids, why not have them around? I think they would absolutely enjoy stuff like that. And you've seen teams will do this during playoff runs sometimes. They'll bring some of their young kids with them, guys who are in AAA or AA that are big prospects. They won't be on the roster, but they'll travel with them throughout the postseason to understand the culture of what they're trying to build. Brock, we've talked about it. This was the challenge this year for Scott Service, who I think we're going to talk to tomorrow at 9:30. This was the challenge for him, right? How do you build a winning culture while your team is mostly losing? And I would say that they've done a pretty darn good job of that this
year. And this is also the group that you want to grow up together and play together eventually. Can they? Will they? Are Kyle Lewis and Evan White and Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick, are all of them, J-Rod, are they all going to be on this roster, right, when they are competitive probably in 2021? That's the goal. That's the hope. Do any of them move this offseason? Right? I mean, there's all sorts of, I think, intrigue in all of that. But to give them a taste, to kind of pay off, I think I was listening to the pregame yesterday, and Flowers and Shannon were talking about a carrot, right, at the end of it. Like, here's what it is. You're enduring what you're enduring. You're playing in a difficult ballpark in AA Arkansas. Well, here's what it can be. And it's just maybe for some of those guys a year or two away. Good news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Do you think they're going to be active in the trade market this offseason? Like, it doesn't feel like Jerry's got much left to trade. He made all of the big trades last year. He traded off all the veterans he could possibly deal this year before the deadline. Do you think there are going to be big moves ahead for the Mariners?
Rumblings, I hear, say yes.
What kind of rumblings?
They are going to start spending this season.
Oh, that they start the free agency this year. Or maybe acquiring.
It could be whatever it is. They start bringing in assets to be major league ready.
I think they should.
You give Gerrit Cole $300 million?
No. Not me. Not for this team.
I wouldn't do that. But I don't know. I feel like you got to wait one more year before you start spending money.
But you don't have assets to trade, really.
Well, that's what I mean. Like the big Jerry DePoto.
I mean, a year ago, you had everybody. Some a year ago, you had Paxton and Zanino. You had a lot of chips.
I mean, what do you have to trade? I mean, the only thing you really have to trade other than kids is Haniger and Gonzalez. And Haniger's coming off an awful year. You're not going to trade him now. Interesting. All right.
Major League Baseball has set a new league-wide strikeout record for the 12th year in a row.
This is beyond bad news. This is some of the worst news we've had. This has to stop. Somebody has to get to the people at baseball and help them understand that the statistical revolution is killing the watchability of the game.
Stop the hype on strikeouts.
Bad news, man. It is really bad news. Nobody wants to watch this many strikeouts. Even ex-pitchers don't like this.
I asked Joe Davis, because he works with Oral Hershiser on his Dodgers games, and then he does the national stuff with Smoltz. I said, oh, man, I love Smoltz. Like, that's the one guy, as a football analyst, I would hope people, if they listen to my broadcast, go, geez, he kind of sounds like, or I learn a little bit like I do when I listen to Smoltz. He's like, oh, he's terrific. He also is, you know, up there yelling from the clouds at the game today. And he's done that, you know, with us when he's joined us. It's just some of the struggles, some of the pain of watching, like last night, 18 strikeouts, just not competitive.
Well, speaking of struggles, speaking of pain, that's generally what you experience as a Cardinals fan. And we'll ask all about what it's like with John Gambadoro, Arizona Sports 98.7. Our buddy Gambo joins us next. I'm Brock and Salk.